You're listening to the only show that looks at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with your host, Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.
Welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. The title for today's show is Becoming a Better Coach, One Transformation at a Time. And if you're listening to this show, hey, hang in there. It promises to be an exciting day. Our radio producer is a little under the weather. Anything could happen at this point. We're just keeping our fingers crossed, and we're going to enjoy the ride. But hey, if you are listening live to our show here on octalkradio.net and you'd like to participate, be sure to call in. This is Talk Radio. Let me give you those numbers. It's 949-713-6443 or 949-713-6447. And hey, join me on the air. Agree, disagree, ask the questions that we're not asking that you want the answers to. So if you're not listening to live, then you must be listening to our podcast, either on Podbeam or on our website. If you do want to find out more about what we're doing, you can go to our website and you can track down everything from the radio shows to our coaching. That's at www.thecoachingperspective.com. Well, today's guest is a longtime friend of mine, and you know, one of the embarrassing things with longtime friends when you have them on the show is you don't tend to get ready the same way you do with someone you don't know. So I am really excited to have Naheed here, but how often do you use your longtime friend's last name? And I'm terrible at reading names and pronouncing them, so I'm going to say Kazaa, but she's going to correct me in a minute. But let me just tell you, Naheed is a 12-year business transition and leadership coach, and she's going to share her own personal journey, lessons that she's learned, and some keys to success in her own practice. And Naheed has a master's in business administration from Pepperdine's Graziadio School of Business. She's got a Bachelor of Science in Psychology from Michigan State University. That's going to become apparent today. And 3 years postgraduate work at Coach U. And she's a fully accredited coach through the ICF, International Coach Federation. She's a past president of the Orange County chapter of the ICF. I had the privilege of serving with her on the board. And let me tell you, she put on one of the best coaching week programs that Orange County has ever seen, maybe anybody has ever seen. She has a background in technology, and she is going to share her story with us today. So, Naheed, welcome to the show.
Hi, Doug. How are you?
All right. So, correct me. I'm sorry about your last name. How do I pronounce it?
No problem. It's Kazaa.
Kazaa. You pronounce both Z's.
Yes,
okay.
You do. Kind of like pizza, I was told.
Oh, now that would have made it a lot easier for me.
Actually, somebody once told me, a true Italian once told me that my name was pronounced Kazaa,
okay.
Like pizza. But I don't know because I just married into it.
Well, hey, I am so excited about having you on the show today. You and I have had a lot of interesting conversations over the years, and I'm sure this is going to be one of those. So, but since not everybody knows you as well as I do, tell our audience a little bit about your path to your current business model. What did you do before you got involved in this? What attracted you to coaching?
Sure. So, well, as you've already heard, I got my bachelor's degree in psychology. I've always really loved psychology, and so I graduated, and I started getting jobs that were traditional, such as working in a home for mentally ill adults, those kinds of jobs. And after a couple of years, I realized they weren't that great of a fit, and I went into business. I wanted to work with more ambitious people, more highly functioning people. I ended up getting my MBA, but I always loved psychology, and I got my psychology fix by doing kind of the people-oriented tasks in business. So I had jobs like recruiting, management, building teams, and other people-oriented things. And then I was ready to go off and do something on my own, and I stumbled over coaching, and that seemed like the great combination of psychology and business. So I went to Coach U, and I got my training, and I've been doing it ever since for about 12 years now.
And very successfully, too. Okay, so now tell us about your coaching practice. You know, the coaches out there, as coaches, we talk to our clients constantly, but we don't talk that much to other coaches and find out what they're doing. So let's clue the other coaches in on what your practice is all about.
Okay. Well, I guess if you put my practice into a nutshell, what I mainly do is combine coaching with training for my clients on how to interact more effectively with others. And I have a couple different types of clients. One type of clients are leaders and organizations. So with them, I'm helping them interact more effectively so that they can lead better. And then I also work with business owners and people who want to make a professional change in their life. And in that case, a lot of times the interactions have to do with getting out there and networking, presenting themselves, articulating what they want to do next, maybe rebranding themselves, that sort of thing.
Okay. And is your coaching mostly face-to-face, phone coaching in their office? Where is it?
You know, I would say 90% of it is on the phone. I just happen to love working on the phone. When I went to school at Coach U, we did all our classes on the phone. I'm a very auditory person, and it works well for me with my life because that way I can organize my phone calls back-to-back while the kids are in school, and then I can be a mom in the afternoon. So it helps me run a very efficient business. And clients who aren't used to working in aren't working with a coach, sometimes they think they have to work in person, but once they've tried working on the phone, you know, they actually enjoy it. It's more efficient for them as well.
Okay, so, you know, the title today, One Transformation at a Time. Mm-hmm. So talk about transformations or transitions. How does that fit into your practice?
Well, I think one of the things that I've noticed, and I've been in coaching for a long time, is that for me, for sure, and then I've noticed it in others as well as I've gone through my practice, is that you tend to have to do work on yourself in order to be more effective with others. So as coaches, we've chosen a profession that facilitates personal growth in other people. And, you know, in order to facilitate personal growth in other people, you have to be very self-aware. You have to know what's going on with yourself. And so in my own journey as a coach, I've done a lot of personal development work, and every time I've reached a new level of personal development, I've interacted with others more effectively, I've become more confident, I've had a better presence, and I've become much more effective with my clients. So it's kind of a happy spiral upwards. Work on yourself, and then you become more effective with others.
And is there a risk in that? I mean, as a potential client listening, I'm going, so you're working on yourself, not on me?
Oh, that's an interesting question. But, you know, I think everyone has to work on themselves, but you don't work on yourself on the client call. You're focusing on the client call. When you work on yourself, it's kind of outside of the client calls.
Okay, so now I've got to find time for myself besides all those other things I do.
Well, you know, it's kind of like anything, you know, any profession. I would imagine that you would have to, I mean, if you were an engineer, for example, you're going to have to keep getting tested in the engineering, you know, professional engineering exam. No matter what you do in life, if you're a dentist, you're going to have to keep up on all the latest dentist methods. If you're a doctor or a surgeon, you're going to have to keep up on that. And I certainly wouldn't want to be seeing a doctor that hadn't, you know, learned anything in the last 10 years. So as far as I'm concerned, anything you do, any profession you do, you have to learn and continuously learn and continuously sharpen your skills at what you do. It's just lucky that what I love doing is professional development, and what's most important for a coach to do is professional development.
So you and I both know that in order to stay licensed as a coach, that we have to, you know, take certain amount of classes and stay up to date with what's going on, and, mm-hmm. and whether we were licensed or not, any coach would want to do that. But I'm getting the sense that this self-improvement quest is a little different than staying up to date on what are the latest coaching techniques.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, coaching techniques tend to only work as well as how authentic you are and how you apply them. But I would say, yes, for example, I'll give you a couple of examples. So for me, I'm coming up with new exercises and tools for my clients to use all the time. Could be assessments, questionnaires, no matter what they do. And if they're going to do them in a workshop that I give, then I'm usually doing them right along with my clients. I may not be doing them in this class with my clients, but I'll do them a week before the class I give and make sure that, you know, I've got an awareness of what it's like to be on both sides of the assessment. And then a lot of times I'll even share with them what I got out of it. And that's really powerful to the people in my groups. So that's one example.
Okay. Did you say you had another one, or was that, is that good?
Well, sure. Like, for example, I love to journal. That's just one of the things that I do that keeps me self-aware. So I journal a lot. I journal every day. I don't think journaling is necessary for everybody because everybody does it differently. But I'm always being aware of what's going on with me. For example, if I have reactions on a phone call with a client, I might journal about it afterwards to make sure I'm very aware of, you know, what was going on inside me and what was me and what was the client. The other thing I think that's really important, that's obvious, that I would think most coaches would say is if you are a coach, you need to have a coach.
Absolutely. Let me ask you on the journaling. Is the journaling that you would do, let's say, after a session with a client, the journaling that you're talking about your own reaction, is that separate and distinct from the journaling that you would do and sort of note-taking about what went on with the client on that call?
Oh, absolutely. So if I'm doing journaling, I'm in a personal journal. I'm talking about myself. And I'll bring all aspects of my life into that. So I might be talking about an experience I had with a neighbor down the street, and, oh, by the way, on this client call I had today, this went on, and on this other client call, this went on, and with my kid, this went on. And I'm noticing a pattern here, and I wonder what this pattern's from, and that type of thing. When I'm maybe taking notes for a client, it's all about the client. So it may be notes jotting down what the client was talking about. We might have the client do a list of pros and cons for something that they're conflicted about, and I may be writing down those pros and cons along with the client so that then I can ask them some questions to probe a little bit deeper. So those are the kinds of notes I would take when I'm on a client call.
Okay. Okay. Tell me a little bit, before we get too far into something else, I want to know a little bit. You are one of those coaches that I really admire, that you have some sort of a set programs rather than just saying coach and pay me hourly. You've got some programs both for individuals and for groups. Do you want to share with our audience a little bit about what those programs are?
Sure. There's a couple of things I do. One of the things that I think is important and that works is this combination of working in a group and working individually with your coach. I mean, of all the different forms of, you know, I guess facilitating accelerated growth, I see this unique benefit that people get when they're learning together and working together. They're bouncing ideas off each other. They're hearing how other people experience the material, et cetera. So one of the programs I have is called the Aspire Community, and it's a program where people join as members, and they have workshops and teleclasses that they can come to every month. And then there's a group coaching aspect of that if they choose to join that, and they can earn coaching sessions and, you know, get on group coaching calls as well. So it kind of offers them the opportunity to have individual coaching and couple that with a group experience. And I've just seen people change more effectively. And I think that's what you do also in the forums that you've done. You do the group experience once a month, and then you give each person an individual session each month, right?
It is, but yeah, correct. But I sense that yours is a little different than mine, and that's why I want to make sure I understand. In that, most of the group coaching I do is within a company. So the group I'm dealing with is the, you know, top executives or the executives in a particular division or location for a company. And I'm sensing that the groups you're talking about are coming from different places.
Yes.
And coming together for your group exercise. Is that right?
Yes. You know, in fact, most of the people in my groups currently are people who used to be clients of mine. I mean, I've been working for a really long time. So someone might hire me as an individual coach, and they may have done that at the beginning, and we sort of keep in touch. But individual coaching tends to be expensive, and so a lot of times people will do it when they're in a lot of pain or they want to make a big change, but it's not something that they kind of budget for ongoing self-improvement. But one of the things that I'm passionate about is that if you want to become your best, if you want to become your most effective, you need to be committed to ongoing self-improvement. So the Aspire Community Program is a program dedicated to ongoing self-improvement. And people could be in that program for 5, 6, 7 years, for a lifetime, and they're always working on themselves. And they can always up or down the intensity of their work based on how crazy their life is at that moment in time. But they're always working. And I've just seen phenomenal changes because people have been able to kind of breathe, and instead of working really intensely on something that has to get done that year at work so they can achieve the objective or not get fired or whatever they're frantic about at work, what they're working on is, I wonder what my core values are. I wonder what I really want to do in life. Oh, I notice I'm having, you know, a lot of reactions to the same thing. I have some unmet needs, and I need to work on getting those met. And that's something that takes a few months, just to become aware that you have a need and then acknowledge it and then start changing your relationships and changing your thinking patterns. That requires a lot of awareness. So that's the kind of thing people work on in my groups.
And talk to me a little bit about the distinction. When we say the term group coaching, is this where the group is being coached, or the individuals are being coached in a group, or is this a training exercise? You know, there's a big difference between maybe facilitating and coaching. Tell us a little bit about how you see this working.
I think there is a big difference between training and facilitating and coaching, and what I do probably is a hybrid model. And the reason it's a hybrid model is because if I am giving a monthly workshop, usually I'll have a set theme for the month. So, for example, this month's theme was selling yourself while being yourself. And last month's theme was relationships. And the month prior was money and, you know, how you interact with money, money and success. So there's a theme for the month. And usually I'm going to bring exercises to the group to interact around that theme. However, I facilitate because I start the group off with, okay, how is this relevant? If it's a small enough group, then we can go around and do a round robin and people can think about how this is relevant. And all the people in my program set a theme for the year, a personal theme, a personal growth goal, how they want to be more effective this year. So examples of some of the personal growth goals is I want to be a better mother to myself, for example. I want to parent myself better. Or I want to be a more effective communicator. Or I want to be much better at setting boundaries at my time. So these are all the types of themes and goals that are very personal. And if you can make a leap in this area, it's going to affect many different aspects of your life. For example, if you get better at setting boundaries on your time, you're going to be calmer and you're going to be more focused on everything you do, and people are going to pick up on that. So you're going to have lots of benefits, lots of tangible benefits, and you're going to be able to achieve a lot of different tangible goals that you have that year more effectively because you're better at setting boundaries on your time. So that's an example. Everyone's going to have a personal growth theme that's individual to them. And so we'll have a topic, but they'll be talking about how that topic relates to them and what they're working on to move forward on their personal growth theme. Does that make sense?
It does. And you know, what crossed my mind is this constant quest that coaches have and that people thinking of hiring coaches are concerned about is figuring out what's their ROI, what's my return on investment in coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And where people coach and it is around feeling better, it is difficult to establish an ROI. But the sense that I have from your coaching is it is very definitely goal-oriented, that there are goals set, there are measurements, and there's an accountability to it. Can you speak to that?
I can, and it's interesting because it's not that way in the way that I would say most people would think of it. So, for example, if a business owner comes into my group and they say, I want to double my revenue this year, and I want to do it by following a sales process, and I want in this group, I want everyone to hold me accountable to following the sales process. As a coach, what I'm looking for is why they aren't following the sales process. If they follow the sales process, great, they'll get to the goal. But people don't come to coaching because when they create a sales process, they follow it no problem, and then they achieve their goals no problem. And it's usually not a problem with the sales process that they came up to. It's usually because they're not acting. It's usually because they're not doing the things on their list because they're petrified. That's what I need to get to. And so when I say that my program is goal-oriented, it's what I'll call personal transformation goal-oriented. So a lot of the education in my program is what's the difference between a tangible goal, such as doubling my revenue, and a personal transformation goal, which is getting over my fear of executing my sales plan, right? Getting over my fear of getting out there and presenting my services. If I can work on that with them on getting over their fear, that's where they're going to get a return. I'm not going to stand over them with a whip and say, how come you didn't make your 10 calls?
All right. So what is the accountability factor then? How is the accountability is not on executing the plan. It's the coaching is not on executing the plan. The coaching is, why aren't you executing the plan? So what is the accountability built around?
It's on personal ownership, I would say. So, for example, first of all, I may have a unique take on accountability. To me, I think maybe traditionally people would think accountability is you come tell me what you're going to do, and then if you don't do it, I'm going to ask you why you haven't done it, which is not exactly what it is. For me, it would be you tell me what you want to do, and then on the next call, you let me know how that went. And if you did it or if you didn't do it, I'm going to assume there was a good reason for that. But if you're conflicted and you're wanting to do something but you're not doing it, what I'm interested in is helping you understand that conflict better. So develop an awareness around that. And as you develop an awareness around that, you can resolve the conflict. So the accountability is just built in on the fact that every week or you're submitting me a progress report, or every month, depending on whatever your frequency is, you're coming back and you're reminding me, you're telling me of what you claimed your personal growth goal was. You're telling me how it went. You're telling me how things are going. You're telling me where you're conflicted. And I'm there to support you in getting clarity. And if you're not moving forward, it's probably because there's something inside you that's conflicted. And my job is to help you unravel that conflict. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Very, very, very clear. I would say that some of what you're talking about, I could change the terminology and I would be very comfortable with it, in the sense that where you're talking awareness, I usually substitute the word perspective. The work I'm doing with my clients is, like you say, not to beat them over the head, but to get them to develop a new perspective of looking at things in a different way. Why didn't it happen? Mm-hmm. How would it look if it did happen? You know, And by shifting perspective, or as you say, becoming aware, the problem almost takes care of itself, doesn't it?
Well, it does, because my belief is you're not going to do anything that doesn't serve you. So if you're doing something that on the surface isn't serving you, doesn't seem like it should be serving you, right? So let's say you've got a goal to achieve a business objective and you've got a plan and you're not following the plan. You know, I assume that, you know, you're not doing it because you're just lazy and you like being lazy, or you don't like following plans, there's probably a couple things, you know, any number of things getting in the way of that. And a couple of examples might be, you might be so overwhelmed that you're having a really hard time prioritizing because this plan is very proactive and the way you run your day is very reactive. So it's not because you don't care about achieving that objective. It's because you haven't figured out how to do it. So there's a conflict there, because then the next question is, okay, so what's driving your reactive behavior? Well, usually there's a positive intention behind it. Usually it's because you want to be responsive. So then the question becomes, okay, you want to be responsive. How can you be responsive and proactive? So my philosophy is, find out what it is the person wants to achieve. If they're not achieving it, find out what's getting in the way. But find out what's driving what's getting in the way and help them become aware of that. Because usually, and I call that a values conflict. So usually you've got something driving your negative behavior that's rooted in a value. It's just the best you can do. So, for example, if I'm procrastinating, this is one of the things that people are always intrigued by. You know, Nahid, why do you say procrastination is a positive thing? Usually when people procrastinate, they're protecting themselves against something that's painful to them.
Yeah, I haven't heard that before.
Yeah, so procrastination could be seen as something positive. And the goal then is to say, well, what positive, you know, could be driving my procrastination? What serves me to avoid this activity that I'm avoiding? You know, and you know, the standard one is, you know, again, because it's so hard for a business owner to grow their business, a standard one might be, well, I'm not making my sales calls because I'm afraid of rejection, for example. So the procrastination is protecting you from rejection. So then let's think about, how can we make that rejection less painful, so that you can achieve your goal, but also be protected from that pain of rejection.
Okay. You know, I want to come back to this, but I've gotten myself totally sidetracked from some questions I did want to ask you.
Okay.
And I'm fascinated by where we've gone, but I have to kind of pull it back. There's a question I like to ask all of our guests, and that has to do with what we call guiding principle. What experience or what lesson did you encounter in life that has sort of created the guiding principle that you live or run your business by? Can you share that with us?
Sure. I guess it's not any different than what I've been talking about so far, which is, if you want to change your life, change yourself. And every time I've wanted to change something in my life, the way I've done it is to change myself. So way back to when I was a kid and I was in high school, and it seemed like there were a bunch of popular kids that liked each other, and I wanted to be liked, and I wanted to be one of the popular kids, I started examining myself. And I said, well, what do I do in my relationships that's effective and that brings me more friends? And what do I do in my relationships that's ineffective? And I got to college, and I kind of burst out of my shell, and I made tons of friends. And then, of course, the next challenge was getting a boyfriend. And, you know, it went on from there. But every single time something in my life wasn't the way I wanted it, then what I did is I looked at myself first, and I said, what am I doing that's working? What am I doing that's not working? Is there something I can change about myself? And every time I did that, I became a new person, to where people who knew me in college come and talk to me now and they say, wow, you've really changed. You're so much more confident now.
So your guiding principle kind of revolves, if I can use my words, around assessing the environment, and if you're not happy with it, change.
Mm-hmm. Because when you change yourself, what happens is you think about things differently. And when you think about things differently, you respond differently to the environment. So, for example, if you always get angry when somebody cuts you off on the freeway, how might you respond?
I don't want to tell you over the air.
Okay. All right. So So probably not.
I might honk my horn. I might drive close to him. I might decide I'm going to pass him.
Okay.
I might just talk to myself and say not nice things about him.
Okay. And then what might that result in?
Sometimes it just escalates my feeling of frustration, and sometimes it relieves it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And probably you would continue to notice people acting weird and cutting you off on the freeway, right?
Yes.
Okay. So what if you changed your perspective, to use your words, and you changed your belief about it, and you began to think that when people cut you off on the freeway, they were just preoccupied, and it certainly wasn't intentional in any way, and you're a good driver, and one of the great skills of a good driver is learning how to drive defensively and to watch out for the 20% of people that may not be paying attention in any given moment. Then how would you behave?
Let's see. I'm going to focus more on my driving, and I am going to be much more tolerant of the people because I've already recognized there's going to be some of them who cut me off.
Okay. And do you think your experience of being on the freeway is going to seem different to you?
Sure. Less stressful.
Less stressful, right? Well, it turns out, and this was just one minor example, but it turns out that the world does work like that. It kind of works like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So as you think about things in a certain way, you let in information that supports your preconceived notions. So if you're driving on a freeway and you think the people on the freeway are just jerks, you're going to notice all the people who are driving like jerks. And it's going to seem like the freeway's filled with people who are driving like jerks, just like when you have a new car and a new model of car in your mind that you're really excited to buy, all of a sudden that car is all over the freeway. And it's not like it wasn't before, it's just that you didn't notice it before. Well, when you have a different perspective and you're thinking about people on the freeway are mostly doing a great job, most of the time they're paying attention, but 20% of the time they might not because they got distracted by their cell phone or whatever, then you're not seeing people messing up all the time. You're not seeing people, and you're driving differently. You're focused more, and it's just a more pleasant experience altogether. We do that at work, too, by the way. And when we think people are great team players at work, they tend to become great team players because we interact with them with a different tone of voice and a different presence about us than the way we might interact with people if we're suspicious of them.
You know, that's great, and it sort of explains my wife's behavior. She's a much nicer person than I am, and somebody will cut us off on the freeway, and I'll say, "Did you see that?" And she's not listening. I'll go, "What are you doing?" And she's going, "They must be having some problem. I'm praying for them that it's all okay."
Yep.
And she switched the perspective totally to being concerned for them rather than irritated with them. So I really like what you're saying. I want to come back to this, but our producer, who is still sort of with us today, has signaled that it's time for a commercial break, so we'll be right back, Naheed.
Okay, great.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
There's something happening out there today. All across America, we're seeing encouraging signs of economic recovery. Businesses are once again thinking about new growth, and new opportunities are emerging. But it raises the question, is your company positioned to take full advantage of the economic recovery and the opportunities it presents? Maybe it's time to ask, how has the recession impacted your business model? Is your business as relevant as it once was? Should you consider entering new markets or expanding into new categories? And what do customers really value about their relationship with you? The golden thread through all these questions and the answer to each and every one of them can be found in just one place. Your brand. It's much deeper than your logo and much bigger than your advertising. Your brand is the enabler of your entire business strategy. Rikus Baird is a brand strategy firm that can help. They specialize in business branding. They've helped hundreds of companies from startups to Fortune 500 leverage their brands to drive growth. They can do the same for yours. It's really quite simple. Find out more, just visit brandingbusiness.com. That's www.brandingbusiness.com. And plant the seed for economic growth. And now back to Doug and his guest.
Okay, Naheed, we're back and having a great conversation here. While we had a break there, is there anything that you wanted to cover that I kind of talked over you that you didn't get to? I just want to make sure that you've had a chance to get out your thoughts.
You know, not really, but it's interesting because on break I started thinking, you know, we were joking about this whole freeway situation, but then we sort of talked about how that also happens in organizations. And I think it's important to just note that this concept of self-fulfilling prophecy is very prevalent in organizations, and it does make a huge difference. So, for example, the manager who always notices their employees' mistakes tends to become a micromanager, and the employees tend to make more and more and more mistakes as a result of the energy that manager puts forth. The manager, on the other hand, that always notices where their employee does well and points it out, tends to empower that employee to continue to do well. And again, that's a pretty simple example within organizations, but this dynamic happens all over the place.
Well, and you know, I think it's a dynamic that's getting a lot of attention, but unfortunately not a lot of it is understood. And and what I'm talking about is all of the dialogue that I hear in companies and see in literature about culture today.
Right.
Everybody is talking about their company culture. People are pointing to, you know, there's a handful of companies like Zappos that just have phenomenal cultures. And people are going, you know, how do I create that culture? And it's sort of what you're talking about. This self-fulfilling prophecy is really the key to culture.
Well, I think you have to be the culture. I mean, I've looked at some of these interviews from these successful CEOs, and what I pick up on mostly is that they're real. They're themselves. They're authentic. And where I see companies go wrong with the culture is when their leaders are talking about this culture that they want to have or that they think they have, but their behavior doesn't match their talk, and the employees can see it. And so the employees don't believe it. And what the employees model is who the leader really is. So in my book, that's why, again, personal growth is the key, because the leader has to be aware. They have to be, I guess, mature enough on the emotional scale of personal growth to at least not have so many blind spots that they're being inauthentic in the work environment, because we're growing as a nation, and you know, just plain bravado doesn't work anymore. People can see right through you, and they're looking for authenticity. They're looking for realness. I think are real, then people will imitate who you are, and who you are becomes the culture.
And the problem is it's harder these days to hide behind something that isn't real. There's too much information out there. There's too much transparency. And if you aren't being real, you will be caught at it. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. Let me switch gears for a minute. What do you think is the biggest challenge that coaches are facing today? You know, I know that a lot of coaches, new coaches, come to you for advice. You're a successful coach, and it's natural for people to come to you and say, you know, how did you get there? What do you do? What do you think is the challenge that the coaching profession is facing right now?
You know, on an individual level, newer coaches, I think the hardest thing is being able to sell coaching or articulate the value of coaching, because coaching is such an intangible thing. And the funny thing is that when it works well and it works right, people experience shifts and their life gets better, but then they forget what it was like before when they were in pain or when things weren't working. They kind of gradually forget that. And it's really, really hard to articulate what happened or what's going to happen, because also you cannot predict what's going to happen. And so I think that's one of the challenges that people face. It's a challenge that I faced for a really, really long time when growing my business.
So let me get clear. So you think that the challenge is one of articulating for new coaches, on an individual basis, articulating what coaching is about?
Not really what coaching is about, but what's the value of it? Like, why should I buy it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I think there's too much focus on what it is and how it's done and not enough focus on what is it going to do for me.
Right, right. And that's a real problem, because, I mean, I've had people call me and say, okay, so if I talk to you for 10 sessions, will I have a job at the end of those 10 sessions if I'm unemployed now? And then you have to go through this whole rigmarole of, well, no, you're not really going to have a job, because that's not really what I'm providing, but I'm providing you with clarity, and I'm providing you with, with steps that you can take, and then you have to kind of own, will that accelerate your progress to getting a job? And that's a complicated thing to say. And you might say it differently each time you say it, and it might be different for each person.
But, you know, I like the example you're given, because I think this is one of the areas that's difficult for a coach and a client, is that there's not enough work at that first session in defining the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of work in defining the process. But I think there needs to be more work in defining what can the client expect to get out of this, is your example. Are they going to get a job? Or are they just going to get clear on what kind of job they really want?
Well, yeah, and for a while there, I would say, you know, most people get on the call with me, and they are feeling kind of confused, ungrounded, maybe irritated, maybe annoyed, maybe stressed out. And typically, when they get off the phone call with me, they're calm, they're clear, and they're more confident about how they want to act. And so I kind of, If I look at the core of what clients get, a lot of it is calm, clear, confident.
Okay.
But even that, I don't know that you can sell.
So what are we selling then?
Well, I think it really depends on each person. But the way I had to figure it out for myself, first of all, was I had to get my identity unattached to the business, which is another thing that coaches have a hard time with, because our business is so much of ourselves. It's so much of who we are in an interaction with somebody that it's really hard to see our business as a business. But when you look at your business as a business, then you have to ask a simple question, and that is, who is it that you serve? What is the problem they have? And how do you solve the problem? And what I realized is, when I think about it, I give my clients all this great stuff. I give them clarity. I give them confidence. I facilitate personal shifts. You know, I make, they feel more grounded when they talk to me. They feel calmer. All those wonderful things. But those aren't the things that people have ever bought from me. And when I looked back on all my clientele and I said, well, what have people bought from me? There's really only two things people have bought from me. When they were in transition and they were in so much pain, it was the pain of confusion. Like, I have no idea what to do next. I have no idea. And so in that case, they would actually lay down some money to get some clarity through the coaching conversation so that they can figure out what they really wanted and what their next steps could be. That's tangible. The second thing is, when leaders in organization are looking at the people in their organization and they're not interacting effectively, and it's ruining the productivity because people aren't talking to each other when they need to be talking to each other to get stuff moving, and now the organizational objectives can't be met, that's painful. And so they will pay to have someone come in and get people interacting more effectively. So those are kind of the two things that I stumbled over that really makes sense to people in my business. I think probably all coaches are a little bit different. They have a little bit of a different take. You know, people may come for them for slightly different reasons, but that's what ended up working for me.
And you know, just to sort of chime in on that, it's not too dissimilar for the business coaching that I do. I mean, I can talk about the things I do, the assessments, the goal setting, but really what it's about, in my words, it's about creating a more effective executive team that's really working together towards a common goal.
Right. So the pain is their executive team is not working as effectively as they can, and they need to work more effectively if they're going to move the organization anywhere. So absolutely, that's worth buying you for.
Yeah, they will understand and they will commit to cure that problem, but they're not too interested in the process. I mean, they are when they get into it, but they're not buying the process. They're buying, tell me that you can help me solve this problem.
Right.
Or in my case, tell me that you're going to show me how to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to solve it. I'm going to show them how to solve it.
Yeah.
Great. What do you think is... let me rephrase it. What is your personal learning style? How do you stay fresh in your business? And how do you learn best?
So how do I learn what? How to coach better?
Whatever it takes to run your business, how do you stay fresh in your business? You've been doing it 12 years. You're certainly not doing the same thing today that you were doing 12 years ago. If the business even has the same name, it's probably being run differently. Service different. So how do
you
stay fresh so that you're able to modify and change?
So I think, you know, the way I learn is probably similar to the way many people learn. I learn by listening and hearing people's stories. So, you know, as I hear the stories of all my clients and all their experiences and what they're learning through the coaching process, I'm also learning that vicariously through their experiences. So I'm learning how they're becoming more effective and what's working for them. I'm also learning what's going on in business from what's going on in my clients' businesses. But more than that, when I'm networking, when I'm talking to other coaches and I hear what's working for them and what's not working for them, when I hear people's stories, I tend to learn, but then I also learn from my own experiences. So I'm always watching my own reactions to things. I'm learning what works for me and what doesn't work for me. So I guess I would say it's my personal experience, experientially, but then also I really drink in other people's experiences, and then I learn what I can from them as well.
You know, and you pointed to two very important points there from the way I see it. One is, really, there's the business, there's the coaching that you do, and there's a way to learn about coaching. You talked about talking to peers, so you stay sharp with what's going on in the coaching world.
Mm-hmm.
And then you talked about the fact that, but you're running a business, it just happens to be coaching, but it is a business, and one of the ways that you learn how to run a better business, whether it's selling or managing or hiring or firing or setting goals or whatever, is partly through the coaching you do with your business clients. Fascinating.
Absolutely. And then of course, I'm going to hire a coach, and going through that coaching process is going to help me learn. And I'll often take I'll take classes, maybe that other coaches give, or, you know, continuing self-improvement courses.
Great. Well, look, as we get ready to wind up here, is there anything else about you or your firm we haven't talked about today that you want to cover?
No, I think we're good. I guess the final message is, you know, as we talk about, you know, what's easy to sell and what's the paradox of all that, and that is I still firmly believe above all else that the key to success is this commitment to ongoing self-improvement, and that is a long-term solution. So it's kind of like people will buy aspirin for a headache or they want to buy diet pills or whatever. But the long-term solution is more lasting. So if anyone's out there listening and they're thinking about wanting to change their life and they're thinking about a quick fix here and there, really seriously consider committing yourself to a process of long-term self-improvement. whether that includes hiring a coach, going to self-improvement classes, enrolling in a program like the Aspire Community, but somehow committing yourself to making those internal changes. And you may not see big changes in your external life right away, but the first changes start pretty quickly. You start seeing things change in about 4 to 6 months, the first things. And then within a few years, anything can change. I've seen tons of clients really create lives that are aligned with their dreams.
Okay, and tell our audience how they get a hold of you. Phone number, website, email, how they contact you.
So the best way to contact me is through my website. There's a contact form there. And I spell the word Aspire a little bit differently than most. It's A-S-P-Y-R-R-E, two R's. So A-S-P-Y-R-R-E, aspire.com. So you can go to www.aspire.com, and you can send me an email through the contact form there. Or you can call me at area code 949-495-1021.
Okay. Now, it has been certainly a pleasure having you on the show today and reconnecting and listening to your words of wisdom. And thank you for taking the time to share it with our audience. And welcome to the Coaching Perspective community.
Thank you so much, Doug. Thank you for having me.
Great. Have a wonderful evening.
All right. You too.
Well, what's our take on that? Well, I mean, it's pretty darn obvious. I didn't have to take a lot of notes to figure out what was the key thing that she was talking about, self-improvement. Because it was easy to understand doesn't mean it's easy to do. But self-improvement, the other thing I picked up on is journaling. Boy, we all know about the benefit of that, and we all do it, and then we drop it. I don't know why that is, but those are things. So I would really encourage you, take advantage of re-listening to this broadcast. We'll have it posted on the website beginning of next week. You'll get a chance to re-listen, take some notes, maybe some things that you missed the first time around. And next week we are going to be dark. I hate to say that, but I'm going to be in San Antonio, Texas, participating in the Conversation Among Masters, CAM. It's a great once-a-year opportunity for master coaches from around the globe to get together and talk about what's going on. Like Nahid, my way of learning is talk to my peers and listen, hopefully more listening than talking. And so I debated about whether we could do a show from San Antonio, but you know what? There's just too many fun things that I have going on in that conference, so I didn't want to commit to it. So when we come back, we'll be back on the air a week from today, and I'll bring you up to date on what's going on, and you'll be able to follow it in on my blog and website, www.thecoachingperspective.com. So thank you for joining us today. Here's hoping that we contributed to your knowledge, your quest for knowledge, and that we have provided you some new ideas and information that you can use to identify and achieve your goals.
You're listening to the only show that looks at business from a different perspective, the Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Coach Doug Gefeller.